Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D. L. White. Chapter 17. Surface Tension. James started to say something to Collier, but Nick didn't hear what it was, because at that moment, two giant rats as big as dogs and dressed in rudimentary leather armour, charged out of the undergrowth right next to Hector and the girl. With remarkable speed, the taller, rather muscle-bound rat twirled a pike around its head before, clack, clack, it deftly smacked both sticks out of the hands of the surprised teens in one fluid motion. The shorter, rounder rat followed up, swinging a battered cricket bat hard into the girl's rear end, causing her to howl in pain. "Four," the rounder rat declared, taking a second swing at Hector's ample derriere. Hector shrieked and leapt back to avoid the blow, which was a mistake, because the taller rat had flipped its pike around and jammed the non-spiked end between his ankles. Hector stumbled over, falling back hard and ending up flat on his back in the deep mud at the edge of the pond. The two rats then rounded on the girl, who was edging back up the path with one hand clutched to her backside. The larger rat lunged at her, just a feint, but enough to cause her to scream and run away into the darkness. Satisfied with their efforts, the rats gave each other a fist bump and sauntered up to James and Jenny.
"Not bad, eh?" the taller one said in a rough Scottish accent.
"Thanks, then," Jenny said, "and thanks, Bobby."
The rounder rat, Bobby, gave a little bow and a flourish of his bat. Even at a distance in the dim light, Nick found it hard to bring himself to look at the two rats. Taller than toddlers, wielding weapons, or at least a pike and a cricket bat, wearing leather and even talking. It could have been comical if they hadn't still looked and moved like the rats that infested his granddad's rubbish bins.
"Come on," Elf said, standing up and tapping Nick on the shoulder.
He stayed where he was for a moment, quite content to remain behind the bush and away from the rats. But Elf held her hand out, and he felt obliged to take it. Cece danced around in front of them excitedly before darting off into the woods again, in the direction that the girl had run. Hector was squirming and squelching at the edge of the pond. With a great amount of effort, he'd sat up, and was now trying to get to his feet. But each time he got a foot up on top of the mud, it slipped out from under him and dumped him back down. Finally, with a lot of grunting, he wormed his way back onto the path, where he lay on his side, caked in thick brown mud, and exhausted from the effort. The two rats stood at James and Jenny's side like sentries.
"Just like you to try an ambush," Elf said.
"You ambushed me," Collier said. "But I have to admit, I did not expect to be attacked by filthy pests."
"Hey,"
Zen said, taking a step toward Collier and readying his pike.
"We're no pests, we're mercenaries. And we haven't actually attacked you yet."
"Got to correct you there. I am a bit of a pest," Bobby admitted. "On my dad's side of the family, his nan was definitely slightly pestilent."
Nick edged to Elf's right, using Collier's wide frame to block out as much of his view of the rats as he could.
"No need to attack," Collier said, less confidence in his voice now. "I'm sure this was all a misunderstanding. It's getting late, and I don't want to be late for dinner."
"You're not leaving until we get the portal book back," James said. Collier was silent. James tapped Bobby on his grey-furred shoulder. "That bat looks like it's almost worn out. Why don't you see if you can break it on Collier, and then I'll get you another one?" Bobby looked at his bat and looked at Collier.
"Only a rat would use another rat as a weapon," Collier said.
"I think that's a compliment," Bobby said to James. "And I could use a new bat."
He twirled the bat around and sauntered up to Zen, who was still brandishing his pike.
"He's a bit tall and wide. I'll concentrate on knees and ankles and shins. Zen, you want to give that new attack a go?
Great idea, Zen said enthusiastically. You go low and I'll go high. There's enough of him for both of us to enjoy.
The two rats sounded like they were talking about what to eat for lunch, not how to cause pain to a human.
Hold on. Even more of the confidence had drained from Collier's voice. Call them off and we can talk.
Talk, Bobby said. We don't get paid to talk.
Where's the portal book? James said.
On three, Zen said. One.
Call them off,
Collier's voice rose in pitch.
Two.
The two rats started to move, away from each other and triangulating on Collier. The book, James said. Where is it?
I don't have it,
Collier said. Last chance. The rats both tensed, ready to spring into attack.
I put it up for auction. Call them off.
Hold on, Zen and Bobby, Jenny said. Both rats lowered their weapons. Nick swore that he saw a look of disappointment on Bobby's ratty face. So you did steal it, Jenny went on. Where is it now?
I told you, Collier said quietly. It's up for auction.
Where exactly? Jenny asked again.
London.
What kind of auction would sell a magical portal book? Elf asked. One that nobody in the real world even knows anything about.
Collier knew about it, James said, and about the key to the air. And he's been tracking us and trying to steal them. Who put you up to it? Collier stayed silent. Bobby, get ready for that new attack, Jenny said. The rat's eyes lit up again.
No, no, Collier said quickly. I don't know who it is. I don't. I just get instructions in messages, that's all.
You get messages to steal stuff from someone you don't know, and you just do what they say. James sounded incredulous. Did the messages say who we were and where to find us? Collier didn't have time to answer. At that moment, a tall, dark figure strode along the path around the edge of the pond on Nick and Elf's side. He could have been a dog walker, except that he didn't have a dog with him. He did, however, have a terrified Cece clamped in one of his hands.
Enough of this, he said with a deep Russian accent. Either I get what I want, or this thing dies.
Cece let out a whimper.
Or perhaps I'll just wring its neck first, if it doesn't shut up. Now, where's the key to the air?
Elf reacted first. She sprinted 5 steps, crouched low, and sprang up at the man, both feet aimed at his head in some kind of kickboxing move.
Uh-uh,
the man said, holding Cece aside with one hand and using the other to casually deflect Elf's kick, sending her tumbling into a pile of leaves.
That one's for free. Next person that tries to attack me will be responsible for the death of this creature.
He held Cece up. She'd given up trying to claw at his hands and hung limply in his grip.
The key to the air. Where is it?
You're not getting it, James said. And then he did the weirdest thing. He kicked the back of Jenny's foot really hard. She didn't complain or shout, just let out a long breath and seemed to stand a little taller. Let Cece go and we'll make a deal, she said. Because whatever you do to her, I'll do the same to Collier. The man laughed.
I'd like to see you try, little girl. Collier works out with me. You don't stand a chance.
Jenny took the man's words as a challenge, striding toward Collier with a look of grim determination on her face.
Uncle,
Collier said, with much less confidence than the man,
don't make her angry.
Before the uncle could reply, a terrifying roar erupted from the nearby darkness, and a huge grey-furred creature came barreling out of the woods and crashed headlong into the man's side. With a scream, he was sent flying over the pond, throwing Cece aside in a desperate attempt to get his hands up to break his fall. The monkey managed to twist in the air and scurry along the man's back before he belly-flopped hard into the flat surface of the water. Cece didn't quite make it to the path, but she was close enough, her feet getting a little wet in the shallows. Elf scooped her up and held her gently in her arms.
What the devil do you lot think you're playing at?
The grey-furred creature roared at no one in particular.
I do not expect to have to deal with this sort of nonsense on my evening stroll. I suggest you all leave before I decide I'm hungry."
With that, it sloped back off into the dark between the trees. Only then did Nick notice the faded shorts and unbuttoned Hawaiian shirt the creature was wearing. Kolya made to leave. "Not you," Jenny said, catching him by his belt and holding him in his tracks. "I meant what I said. What happens to Cece happens to you. And your uncle just threw Cece into the pond."
"Come now," Kolya pleaded. "That's not what happened. That crazy monster knocked him in, and your dog barely got its feet wet."
The uncle had managed to half swim and half crawl over to a patch of extra thick mud where he paused to rest. "Nick," Jenny asked, "what did you see?" That creature did knock Collier's uncle into the pond, Nick nodded, weighing up the facts. It was pretty mad.
"See?"
Collier said desperately. "But your uncle also definitely threw Cece into the pond," Nick said. "That decides it," Jenny said, planting a foot toward the pond and hauling at Collier's belt with both hands. Somehow, she managed to heave the man-boy over her shoulder at such a speed that Nick was worried he'd clear the water and land in a heap on the other side. But Jenny's angle of release was perfect, as was her aim. Collier peaked at an altitude of 10 feet, arms flapping wildly like a deranged butterfly, before he plummeted into the middle of the cold, brown water. The man-boy disappeared completely for a second or two before thrashing back up to the surface.
"Wonderful form," Zen called out, "though you didn't quite stick the landing."
8.6,
Bobby said, still looking disappointed that there wasn't any more fighting to be had.
"Uncle, help!"
Kolya called out, slapping hard with his arms to keep his head out of the water.
"Just swim,"
his uncle said, waist-deep in mud and still a good couple of meters from the path.
"I'm not coming back in to get you."
"That creature seemed pretty angry about us being here," Nick said. "Shouldn't we go?" "Yes," James said. "We don't want to annoy him any more than he is already. Zen, Bobby, keep a discreet eye on these three, and if they do anything other than walk straight back to their car, you can use this to let the king know they've just insulted the priestess." He took a leather band off his left wrist and tossed it to Zen, who caught it on the sharp end of his pike.
"Will do," he said. "Nice to see you all again."
"And you," Jenny said. They left Kolya flailing towards his uncle, who was inching his way out of the mud. Hector, who was covered from head to foot in the stuff, was walking heavily around the edge to look for a way to help Kolya, but was reluctant to step off the path in case he slipped back in. Using the light of James's torch, they navigated back through the woods to Ditchling Road. On the side of the road, right near the start of the path, there was a black, expensive-looking Mercedes with weird number plates. It reminded Nick of the car that had taken him to Twitchell's. "Think that's Collier's uncle's?" James asked.
"Probably," Elf said, "but we can't be sure. I think those are diplomatic plates."
They crossed the road to a tarmac cycle path. A few minutes later, they reached the first of the town's streetlights, and James turned his torch off. "What was that thing?" Nick asked when they were safely back in civilization. "That's the king under the fort," James said. "He's an oversized badger, one with a very bad temper." "We made a promise not to draw any undue attention to him," Jenny said, "which I think we just broke." Elf, who had been quietly cuddling Cece, shook her head.
"We didn't break it. It was that stupid man. I can't believe Collier's uncle is actually worse than Collier."
"They all got what they deserved," James said. "I'm just annoyed we didn't get the book back. And it sounds like we might not, if it's gone to this auction." "At least we learned that much," Jenny said, "thanks to Nick's plan." "We need to find out what and where the auction is," James said. "Otherwise, there's no hope of finding the portal book." "I doubt Kolya will want to speak to us about it," Jenny said. "We should probably avoid him as much as possible from now on."
"I'll check with Claudia in the morning," Elf said. "See if she knows anything about the auction."
Nick put his hands in the leather jacket and wondered how he could be of any use at all. Sure, he'd come up with an idea to trap Kolya, but during the actual action, he'd done nothing but watch the others. Not that he ever believed he'd be any good in a fight. Not against Collier, or his uncle, or that huge badger. And the rats, they were worse than he'd imagined. The best case scenario for him was to use his hacking skills from the relative safety of Elf's house. No one said much for the rest of the walk. Everyone was exhausted. As much from staying up late talking the night before as from the confrontation at the Dewpond. Once back at Elf's, they went straight to bed. Well, after they'd mopped up the leftover curry. The plan for Sunday was patchy. But one thing everyone agreed on was that it needed to include ice cream. This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.